It is now time for Mic Check, our featured segment, Sparking Global Changes. Ladies and gentlemen, we are in the month of June. And what is the month of June? The month of June is dubbed Men's Mental Awareness Month. It's now time, ladies and gentlemen, to address the specific, the challenges, and the barriers that men faces. And to help us normalize this conversation, ladies and gentlemen, it's a difficult conversation. We have with us, yes indeed, Dr. Mohammed A. Rahman to join us this Saturday morning to have this very tough conversation. Indeed, ladies and gentlemen, we as men, we have faced many, many challenges. So I welcome Dr. Mohammed this morning. Good morning, Doc. How are you?
Greetings and everything for Kankori. What about you?
As they say, well, you know, Doc, I am blessed. I woke up this morning. My 2 feet touched the ground. So I say amen to that. This is the day the Lord has made. So let us all rejoice in it. Indeed, indeed. I hope you had a blessed week, Doc. Huh?
No, well, you know, sometimes when you're in this situation, mm-hmm. you know, like if you go back and listen to Bob Marley. I listen to Burning Spear. I listen to even the Abyssinians.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the task is that when you're in the African village squares,
mm-hmm.
you know, you have to basically have, you know, the kind of energy where Bob said emancipate yourself every day.
Mm-hmm.
It's a work involving certain things, you understand? So,
indeed.
Yeah, for basically being engaged. So, you take the day as it comes, you know, in terms of the things you have on the table, you do the best you can. And,
indeed.
And if you rise up again at the sun's strong, you just continue and do it after this.
Yeah,
you know?
Yes, indeed. You know, you mentioned the African Village Square, and it just draw back my memories to the old station that we were on. There was a program on the station at midnight every Saturday night with my brother, Junior Jiwawa Blake, and it was entitled Meeting in the African Village Square. So, you know, it brings back some deep, deep memories. Now, we're in the month of June, Doc. We're in the month mm-hmm. of June, and the month of June is dubbed Men's Mental Awareness Month. You know, it's a very challenging time, and you know, if you look at what we have gone through as men, especially black and brown men in this world, in today's world, in yesterday's world, you know, we can fully understand why there is a month which was set aside for Men's Mental Awareness Month. But every day to me is Men's Mental Awareness Day. You know, walk us through some of the specifics, Doc, of you know, when we talk about men's mental health. It's tough, huh? Hmm?
Yeah, well, all right. You know, since you're going back there, you get a reflection. Let's go back and if you want to have a real honest, we can't cover everything in 5-10 minutes or whatever. So this is a village conversation that I must take place. So I want to share something with you.
Mm-hmm.
And this will help you understand how we can frame the conversation. All right. If you understand the term of Sankofa, you know, back and fetch what is at risk of being left behind, which is almost the African, West African tradition. So as I think about the conversation we're going to have, I say, how does the conversation get on the ground and find meaning?
Mm-hmm.
How does the conversation kind of move in a direction that talks specifically to the question there is about now, contemporary and the past and the global dynamics?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to take you back. I want you to travel with me briefly.
Yeah, man.
My experience with this question has always been an experience that I had when I was just come out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
Most youth in our time, we had the National Service thing in Jamaica in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember I wanted to go to JBC to kind of work in the script writing. So when I got to the ministry for my assignment, when I got there, the manager said, the coordinator said, your spot is gone. So you have two choices.
Mm-hmm.
Either go to work with the Division of Youth or you work with the Justice Department. So I said, well, I went to the Justice Department.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a KC Bridging that was before me. So he got his thing and he jumped on the bus. And I run behind him and, you know, we got to the place. So when I got there, it happened that the deputy commissioner of the probation department was the one at the training institution up on King's House Road.
Mm-hmm.
So he said to me, say it with a smile, say you come a week late.
Mm.
And you can't go in the field. You have to get the training that to put you in the field to go out. At the time, they were assigning us as justice fellows.
Mm-hmm.
So Jamaica was on the spot to address recidivism, which is a major problem among youth in Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
So I get the benefit of my bridging after 35 years of when I leave yard, tell him, say, you got my spot, and he was telling me something. So we had another conversation. But he said, but I was assigned, I got the specialized training, and I was assigned to the chief RM judge at Hawfordtree.
Mm-hmm.
So I was supposed to make investigative reporting and make a help or make sentencing and all kind of stuff like that. So a man came to the court and he had problems. He was whiffing. He had body odors, all kind of thing, very challenging.
Mm-hmm.
So I went and I was supposed to interview him. So when I was interviewing, he wouldn't talk. He just looked at me and looked straight past me. He wouldn't say nothing.
Mm.
So I tried to engage him and he wouldn't talk.
Mm.
So I told the judge and she said, well, all right. Have your boss come down. And she was a yard woman. You know, she's a from African East Indian descent. And she used to wear sari back then, a beautiful woman mm-hmm. in spirit and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So they brought him into the office, and when they brought him, I had the handcuff. So she said, I must take the handcuff off him and put him over there. He's not going to go anywhere because you all are here.
Mm-hmm.
But she said to him, so, well, you know, Mohammed trying to get an interview with you,
mm-hmm.
and we want to know how to help you because you're in the docket of the court, and the judge don't want to just put you away because they charge you for lighter and whatever the charges were.
Mm-hmm.
She said, but you have to help us. And for the first time, the long and short is, he break his silence. And mm-hmm. he said to us that he'll talk to her under one condition.
Mm-hmm.
She said, what is the condition? She said, I'm not going to gaslight you. I'm going to be honest with you. Whatever the condition, I'm going to be honest and say, if I can't, I can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So he made the whole room, just start laughing. He said to her that, Chef, we agreed to be his girlfriend before we can talk to her.
Wow, I would laugh too.
So the cop, everybody in the place laugh, and my supervisor
uh-huh.
smiled.
Uh-huh.
So, and without batting an eye, she said, listen, what you are asking, which is normal. She said, but I have a suitor. I'm engaged to somebody, and we have been in at a minute. She said, okay, let me ask you this. What about if for some reason, I want to, it's not going good and I want to consider you. How do I know what you look like?
Mm-hmm.
How do I know who you are? Mm-hmm. I don't know. You're not helping me.
Mm-hmm.
And him smile and say, okay, I'm going to take a bath and him come back and talk with her.
Mm.
So they took him to take a shower, they clean him up and give him some clothes. And when he come back in the room, Bridging, she said to him, oh my God, you're so handsome. She said, why would you want to hide all of that from the rest of the world?
Mm.
Right? And from that, she was able to get the docket, get the assessment, and she submitted to the court. And I stayed with that for over 50 years because, in other words, what would make a professional person? She's a psychiatrist.
Right.
In a society like ours, with all its nuances, she didn't feel offended what he said to her.
Mm-hmm.
So she was looking at the person that was in front of her, but she was looking at greater than the person. Yeah. In other words, the deeper part of who identify who he is. And in one of the noted psychologists in the field said years ago, Dr. Asa Elliott, we have to constantly ask three important questions in life. Mm-hmm. The first question is, who am I?
Mm-hmm.
Where in the world am I from? And how in the world did I get here?
Mm. Who am I? Who am I?
Yes.
Where in the world am I from? And how did I get here?
And how in the world did I get here?
Wow. Go ahead.
So when he said that, that is a mantra now that you're going to bring in the conversation in the community. And I want to be focused specifically on Jamaica for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Emily Clark, Dr. Ben, and Dr. Ruth Johanna, you're familiar with the names, correct? Okay. So Dr. Clark at the time was older than, I guess, a little older than Dr. Ben and Dr. Dr. Vern Sodema. And he was on Like It Is.
Mm-hmm.
And he was having a conversation, and he said something very powerful. He said that if you put it in the context of what I just told you, he said, in order for African descended and brown and black people, or people in general, to get a sense of answering those questions of where you, of who you are, re-examination of Jamaican issues is critical and must be part of a centric conversation in the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And over the years, when I've compare what he has said, if he was to say in academia, juxtapose, compare what Dr. Clark said and what Dr. Illard had said, and put it in the context and create a synergy between what the psychiatrist did for me at that time. Those are profound things that bring some important ways of looking and dealing with issues that men face in the community.
Mm-hmm.
From a personal point of view, from a sense of family and from a sense of community.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we have two noted psychiatrists that we can give attribution for that.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is Dr. Frederick Hicklin.
Yeah.
And Hicklin developed the program in terms of cultural therapy and dynamics when he looked at his contribution to UWI and the Dreamer World project.
He went back
to the kind of deconstruction and downsizing of what he did in terms of bringing mental health. You know, Bellevue was a model that is in the British world that they use.
Mm-hmm.
But what he did, that he got an honorary note as the only country and only scholar at the time who demonstrated one of the most efficacy model in terms of what he did at Bellevue.
Mm-hmm.
Because he brought psychiatry and mental health in a dynamic way into the public sphere to begin to deal with the challenges of aggression, those violence in the school, and he had a model to kind of go across Jamaica. I don't know where the model is now with Carrie Mensah in Jamaica, but that's a place that we can start. And
yeah.
if you go back and look in our community, Miss Lou used to help us with that too.
Mm-hmm.
Miss Lou used to have Labrish.
Yeah.
And talk about the retention that we have in holding on to the what they say chap English. She said no, it's a retention. It's a cultural retention of language formation that come out of our experience as African people. Mm-hmm. And the way Jamaican people speak is dynamic because it's a kind of synergy of trying to hold on to those retention,
right,
and those sense of those and those meaning.
Hold your thoughts one second, Dr. Ben, because I don't, Dr. Mohammed, because I don't want to go too far into this yet, because you brought up something very important, and I'm going to stick to these three questions. Who am I? Where in the world I'm from? And how the hell did I get here? How did we get here? And it brings me back to what we went through to get here, and how it has damaged us over the years. And because we never had these conversations. For some reason, we tend to shy away from these conversations. And it brings us now to the point where black and brown men, dies from suicide some four times more than women and others. Is it that because we still don't understand who am I, where in the world I'm from, and how the hell we got here?
That's an important part of it. I'm going to tell you why I say that.
Mm-hmm.
You're raising a very good question. Okay. Now let's go back and say, for example, the yard virgin who was the doctor's interviewing.
Mm-hmm.
If I want to stay with it for a good reason.
Yeah, man.
In the 70s, Jamaica was leading with non-developing, non-aligned nation and the CARICOM. And they had, I think it's 72,
mm-hmm.
they had a conference in Jamaica around recidivism and how to begin to tackle it. And so he represent someone who the system had failed.
Mm-hmm.
Because at his age, he must have gone into foster homes, group homes, and he was basically, his family had been destroyed, and he was living from place to place. So the police picked him up and locked him up and charged him for vagrancy and loitering.
Mm-hmm.
And so now he may get sentenced to crime about long, long rap sheet.
Mm-hmm.
And so he, on a cognitive level, he's been impacted. So his way to deal with this just be disheveled in the way that he sees no value in himself. But the thing is, somehow, maybe by God's mercy, he didn't commit suicide.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe he had some different set of circumstances that were not, say, something that he was challenged with, for example, with maybe, what is attachment formation impacts brain development. So maybe he didn't have that kind of impact where he's prone to kind of suicide ideation. But his behavior was of such that he was in the facility at Harford Tree and didn't want to take a shower.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't see nothing in his cognitive mind wrong with that. So there was a disassociation with him and his reality.
Mm-hmm.
So what Dr. Icklin was saying is that the experience of 500 oppression, racism and colonization,
mm-hmm.
you know, he says that it has created a whole and he made a comment. And he said the sole mode of abuse and deprivation linked to the history of slavery and colonialism
mm-hmm.
is the origin of the conflict and stress, tension, anger, anxiety, sadness, and despair that characterized the post-colonial experience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he says, my experience as a third, I'm giving you directly, I want to quote from him.
Yeah.
My experience as a third generation African Caribbean psychiatrist has given me the insight into this intergenerational process and led me to the conviction that we have all our own madness. This is what he said, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the reasons why he's talking about decolonizing global mental health through Jamaican psychiatry.
Mm-hmm.
And his model was effective. But
mm-hmm.
stick up in. Bob Marley put down the song.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Marley put down the song. And that was part of the, if you want to say, for our generation and your generation, maybe we're both at the same age bracket, the reggae music was a way for kind of deal with some of the mental traumas that we experienced as a people.
Mm-hmm. But when you said Bob Marley put it in the song, are you talking about the song that says emancipate yourself from mental slavery? None of us but ourselves will free our mind. Are you talking about that specific song?
Yes, exactly.
Ah,
exactly. Because Bob Marley got influenced by the culture of reggae music when he was at Studio One and mm-hmm. when he was living in Kingston 12, because mm-hmm. that was the heart and that was the beat of the culture. Because
Indeed. And
I don't know, is a place, and I asked a brethren one day, so maybe I want more feather smoking at the green thing or not. And him laughed.
Mm-hmm.
I want to ask that question. So he said, well, there's a place called Mispa.
Mm-hmm.
Mispa used to be on Slipen Road.
Mm-hmm.
And the Virgin Rasclaim, I asked the dread, what is it about that place that had a kind of influence, a kind of psycho-spiritual influence on the community?
Right.
And I said, maybe just me said, no, you're right. Mispa was kind of post movement that come out of Bedwood spiritualist revivalist movement.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do, that they used to have a little thing where them a prism called the Holy Water. Every person in the community, by none, even man getting in trouble,
mm-hmm.
man will think would never go in the prison. Go inside, never get a little of the water,
yeah.
and get better do put him on pan them at them head.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest said to me, say, you have to understand something. Him said, the man, right. Him said, every in the community, you can find a man whose mother, grandmother, father, grandfather, somebody in the family who take that kind of that Sankofa spirit back home to them, to the house. So them bring it me a certain kind of calm. And then they said that in the community spiral space of Mispa, what happened is that the people used to move to the rhythm of the revivalist song that was singing in the place.
Go ahead.
And so when Bobby sang Liberate Yourself, mm-hmm. the reggae music became a medium for that to take place.
Indeed. And you know, for some reason, you know, you have to understand this. You have to understand where this thing is. And reggae music then is not the same reggae music today. And absolutely, you are right. The music of Bob was very profound and very powerful. And we are still exploring some of the songwriters who were surrounding Bob Marley. But as we stay with this conversation, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Grooving Radio. We are in our featured segment. It is called Mic Check, Sparking Global Change. The conversation this morning, as we are in the month of June, and June is dubbed Men's Mental Awareness Month. And, you know, for some forsake reason, we don't like to have these conversations. But it is also said, you know, why is it, Doctor? My very special guest is Dr. Mohammed. Doc, why are so many men feel pressure to stay quiet about mental health? Is it because of the stigma that is attached to when a man says, you know, mentally I'm feeling a certain way? Is it that's why we stay quiet?
Okay, good. Good question. Culturally, yes, systematically, yes, culture, shame and guilt,
mm-hmm.
and fear of isolation and degradation. And here's the thing, and this is, you're asking a very important question. Why did I reference Bob's song?
Mm-hmm.
Because Bob Marley came at a time where the reggae artists was concerned about the question of reparations and repatriation. Mm-hmm. The song was about that. Sata Masagana was talking mm-hmm. about fellowship mm-hmm. together.
Mm-hmm.
So Sata Masagana became this. The anthem of reggae music,
mm-hmm.
and Rasplana and the man them was talking about going back to Ethiopia and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That was part of the conversation. But here's another thing that you have to remember. You understand most. I don't know if the younger generation understand the idea of the, you want to call the boat.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I call you and say, Ras, want cook a feed, you know? You don't have rice in.
Mm-hmm.
You say, you know what, me have some coal here, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Your mother hear the conversation, say, me have some pepper in the back, then you can use it.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
this whole idea, and this is important.
Mm-hmm.
In Jamaica, there's a struggle, what reggae music was trying to get us to understand, the difference between the village and the ghetto.
Yeah.
So in our culture, thing, what reggae was trying to tell us is that we come from an African village culture, not a ghetto.
Mm-hmm.
Ghetto is a kind of post, come out of European construction based on what happened in Europe. So we come out of a village culture. And
mm-hmm.
if for example, the pot cook,
mm-hmm.
and you say, you know something, Ras Tony gone look for a slave, you know. A man say, I'm good. We'll put a butter pan and leave something for him. And put some of the lemon here, the wash in a glass and cover him, come and can't eat it. So there was a community concern for the least of these in our community.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I have observed some interesting thing in terms of our development, where there's a man in our community, he had problems with speech, and he got hit a couple of times with vehicle-related issues, and he was like, he was talking about outcast, he was strong,
mm-hmm.
and people helped him deliver things. But I watched my grandmother and them having conversation in the morning, when we used to read the newspaper for them,
mm-hmm.
when they couldn't read because of the, you know, they get older, and they get into this conversation about politics, history, and religion in the yard.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever you want to say something,
mm-hmm.
all of them stop.
Mm-hmm.
And listen to him, and it's sometimes what he's saying not discernible, but he expressed himself on him. He was very, you know, animated himself and him expressed himself and put him on up and like him want to them go and certain kind of thing. And they don't get offended.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, him going to exit the conversation. They said to him, say, all right, we see you tomorrow. Okay, come back here. Okay.
Doc, hold your thoughts there 1 second, because we're about to sign off from one of the platforms that we're on, the main platform that we're on, which is Irie Jam Radio. So we're going to say bye to the listeners there for now. And coming up next on Irie Jam will be Erwin Clare with the fact of the matter. But we will continue the conversation with Dr. Mohammed after the top of the 11 o'clock. Well, the conversation we're having this morning, ladies and gentlemen, it's a very serious conversation, and it's about men's mental awareness, and June is dubbed Men's Mental Awareness Month, and we have to pay attention to this, ladies and gentlemen, because the challenges that we face as men, some of us tend to stay, well, I would even say some in a Dr. Mohammed, a lot of us tend to stay quiet on this subject matter. And that was the question I just posed to you. And it's sometimes we feel pressured, because oftentimes if you tell someone that you're going to therapy, and you're also a therapist, if you're telling someone that you're going to therapy, they tend to kind of label you. And you know, us as Jamaican, when we label people in a doc, it kind of stick, you know. And it get embarrassing for some, huh?
No, it does. And this is what Eklund is talking about, because Eklund is saying, let's go back to your point. Let's go back and say, who am I? Eklund said, when the colonizers came on the ships, our native, quote unquote, people, African descended, Taino and Cariba people, they had a communal sense of caring for the least of these. Mm-hmm. So people who experienced mental challenge was not isolated and stigmatized. Mm-hmm. They were integrated as an important part of community, meant as the community taking care of them. Mm-hmm. So maybe someone in the community who has the skill set and is as a dynamic way would engage that person. That person, even in the mental challenge, feel a sense of belonging. Mm-hmm. And this is what Dr. Eklund said. That so what has happened is that the communal care were the communal way of caring for people, we threw it out, and we embrace the kind of dysfunctional, dehumanizing experience of the slavery, and that's how we begin the lens that we begin to see each other through.
Mm-hmm.
No. And so that become the dominant model. Mm-hmm. And so it's like one time I was working with some youth in Jamaica, you know, back then.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, you know, I would come court and him go court and him come court. So they wanted to kind of do some kind of experiment thing. So I was, you know, I'd done some work at UA at the time. And so I was working with the youth. So him come in and him a child fireman.
Mm-hmm.
He said, boy, the girl come in, spit pan her in and she come, you know, see it. And I said, Mr. Calm down, I said, what happened?
Mm-hmm.
He went to court apparently, and his mother tells the judge, say, I'm not go to school, I'm not listen to her.
Mm.
So I said to him, say, then Bridget, tell me something for real. You go to school, sir? He said, no, sir. He said, no, she'll lie.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I walk and I carry two for black for third man. He said, yes, sir. Then they say, hold on a little bit. If your mother carry for 9 months, she have big responsible, she have put on big shoes, I said the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
Are you a keep up arms, or you know? So the kind of communal clear and the kind of discourse that can take place because of the stigma that we feel we don't want to kind of be associated with someone who will challenge a kind of spiritual dysregulation. We stigmatize the people because sometimes we have our own fear, trepidation. We don't know how to deal with it.
Mm. How do we normalize? How do we normalize this conversation, Dr. Mohammed? Because it is something that we have to now figure out a way to discuss. Because, you know, because of sickness.
Hold on.
Before you answer, because of sickness. Because sometimes when someone is diagnosed with something, it affects them mentally. Based on how they are supported. Because of a debt in the family, sometimes people get depressed. There are different things that actually triggers depression. And depression can lead to mental stress. how do we now try and normalize this conversation so there's no stigma attached to mental health? How do we do that?
Okay, all right. Okay, so this is what Eklund is talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You said that the conversation has to start from growing up and top down. What do I mean by that?
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, when if you want to take a case narrative, for example, I can't discuss all of the particulars, but I can just say this to you.
Mm-hmm.
One day, someone had referred somebody who was an ex-military person to me, and we were on a conversation. He said he wanted to talk to me about something, so I said, well, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So he called up, and I said, well, how can I be of help? And he said, you know, because it was a consult. I was on the phone with him. It was about 10 o'clock at night, so I said, give me a couple of seconds. Let me do something. So I did it. When I did that, I said, well, let's talk about what is it that brought it. So he started talking about the spiritual self and where he's at, because he was dealing with dual substance abuse and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he got to the point where he said, I wanted to consider some kind of spiritual way of dealing with where I'm at. And a conversation occurred between me and him.
Mm-hmm.
And then somehow it was a breakthrough.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you ever seen the Godfather 3 movie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, when Michael was crying in Italy when his daughter got killed,
mm-hmm.
That's the kind of not crying. It's the kind of bawling the brother on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Thought it, ball, but I said, you're going to harm yourself. Said no, and he said. So I kept staying with him until, and you know when he got to that point that he could find the burden was safe enough to say, he said he had hope for the first time in his life.
Mm.
And I said, what do you mean by that? He said that because he said that basically he was a phenomenal military man in African descended person in Vietnam. And he had a child that was born to him and a Vietnamese woman who was an American child. And for the summary of the whole thing, the girl got killed. But the girl got killed as an act of revenge because they wanted to kind of either capture him or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so this loss, which is ambiguous and ambiguous loss of the death and dying of his daughter, that's why some people say the death in the cradle syndrome,
mm-hmm.
It impacted him to the point that he don't think that the creator of the universe is going to forgive him. I said, no, stop. I said, if you were doing something as a military person, that was one part of your path in your development.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't reconcile that now because you have lost in ways your daughter.
Mm.
And she got killed. She was maybe about less than 6 or 7 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So coming back and dealing with PTSD and being rejected by the society, so there were baby killers and woman killers in Vietnam and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And as African descent man, he's going to take a deep dive because he's dealing with racial microaggression.
Right.
He's dealing with racial battle fatigue. All of the upcoming diagnoses that black psychiatrists and psychiatrists are working on. So he fit into the bill of experience and all of that and more.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that we had a conversation, what I said to him was that, you know, that we are spirit beings having a human experience.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to understand the relationship between the psycho-spiritual of who you are as a person.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where the resolution occurs, because you can begin to mediate the conflict. So when I asked my friend the next day, he said, man, your friend did a building off of my back. And he went someplace in the Pacific Midwest. I haven't seen him since.
Mm.
But that conversation stayed with me for a while, because he's a man who was the question you talk about, it's a deeper sense of guilt where you feel that there's no hope, there's no way in which that you can reconcile wherever you're stuck.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't get past the next level.
Yeah.
And so you have to take a deeper dive. And this is what Dr. Eklund is saying. Part of that for us in the Caribbean, Jamaica, is beginning to have a way that we can socially express not what is in the music now.
Yeah.
The legacy of post-traumatic slavery syndrome, yes, and post-traumatic that we have experienced in our culture, in,
right,
Jamaica,
right,
and in the rest of the Caribbean.
Indeed.
Take responsibility and then don't get a sense of feeling shame for it,
uh-huh,
but begin to help make sure it mediate the curriculum of the conversation.
All right. And that is why we have to try and figure out a way to normalize this. But as you were talking about the debt and military experience, listen to this, Doc. And ladies and gentlemen, once again, you're listening to Grooving Radio. We are in our featured segment, Mic Check. The conversation is around men's mental health. June is dubbed Men's Mental Awareness Month, and my special guest this morning is Dr. Mohammed. You know, culturally, Doc, culturally, there is a lot of pressure on men to be unwavering and to provide financially for their families. That often creates a high level of stress and anxiety. Listen,
right,
listen carefully. That often creates a high level of stress and anxiety. On top of that, men may have a genetic disposition to mental health issues, or they may experience trauma from work or military experience. So we suffer in many different ways, but because we are so stressed out and we are so anxious and we want to ensure, but because they say the men is the head of the household and we want to make sure that financially our families are secure, and if we should ever fall short, or if we're falling short, it will affect us mentally. And sometimes it becomes traumatic. And then you talk about the military experience or the debt experience, and then we go quiet. At what point, Dr. Mohammed, at what point in our life we say, you know what? We need to sit down with a therapist. And how do you choose a therapist who is going to understand or overstand what you're going through, Dr. Mohammed? How do you do that?
Okay, good question. And this is one of the reasons why I'm kind of, this is a conversation that's going to continue. That's one of the reasons why I wanted you to talk to, and I'm going to give him some plug.
And we will. And we will get there. But how do we manage this when we feel so much pressure, when we are set to provide financially for our family and we fall short? We get stressed and we get anxious.
I'm going there with you. Mm-hmm. I'm with you.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that Dr. Edwards, that's why I wanted on the thing. We have to then try to use what we have used in the village scale. One of the ways to begin to do that is that we have to then go to our faith houses,
mm-hmm,
and have like people that, in fact, I know you can't, I'll send it to you after the program, but he's doing a talk sometime next week at the faith house. One of the things that he's doing is trying to have his group have a therapeutic center as part of the offering for the community,
mm-hmm,
and it's going to be opened up not just to members but to people in the community, so they can come in and get the benefit of psycho-spiritual assessment. As I say, you have to create the safe space in the first place. So when people walk in, it's not prohibitive for cost. There's no guilt. There's no association with shame, so they can then get in and then kind of have a kind of create the nuance, so to speak, open up the conversation. And the reason why I'm saying that, let's go back to the veteran.
Mm-hmm.
This brother worked with me for a number of years. He had a brother. He was also a vet. But we were just in the community, and he introduced me to the brother. And we just exchanged certain words.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, the brother asked me, what do you do?
Mm-hmm.
So I told him. He said, no, I need to talk with him, man. I like his energy.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that in the community space he's getting, and this is important, he is in substance abuse treatment intervention. It's not working for him.
Mm-hmm.
He's getting professional help in certain kind of settings, not working. And at the same time, I don't know what triggered in the conversation when I was introduced to him, but I know in the African village, relationship is king and queen.
Mm-hmm.
When we create a safety culture where relationship is king and queen, we value that relationship. And Ms. Lou gave us the example when she provided. On Saturday, we always listened to Dulcimina. Dulcimina was the most troubling girl in our community.
And
we got to go back to the narrative, understand. Mm-hmm. And because of the role of Nana and Tata being centric to be concerned about the welfare of the community, Dulcimina got the benefit and the help of people who could reach out and touch her.
Mm. Have we got...
And so... One of the things that we got to start having the conversation, this is what Dr. Edward is trying to do with the ministers, because what he does is that he's a psychologist for of record for the UMC and AME. So working in having the conversation in the psycho-spiritual spaces,
mm-hmm.
where church members, whether you're in the mosque, synagogue, or wherever you are as a member, and you begin to see these things happen, if you embrace and create a spiral effect outward, to let people know that, you know, there's no shame and guilt. The space is available. If you want, you can come in. If we can find anyone here, we are creating a network where we're going to start having the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what, when I mentioned the boat thing happening in the community, because if you cook the boat and a man say, Tom, you're on the corner, he say, sometime in a Jamaican fire, say, the madman, a man said, don't say that, brethren. Because the man comes to them, he can meet with I and I.
Mm-hmm.
And when he comes in, somebody said to him, Tommy, what's your name? Comes to him, eat that thing. You know? So he's having his own message. We don't know if he lost his job. We don't know if it's a hereditary thing. We don't know a lot of things about. But the point is that he can come to the boat village in the yard, in the compound, and eat and feel safe. And now dead hunger for rob something and get arrested. It mediates a lot of other things that would happen to him on a continuum. You follow what I'm saying to you?
Yeah, you know, Doc, and yes, that will work in Jamaica. And I see where you're trying to simplify this thing as simple as possible. But on a wider scale here in the United States, where migration has taken us all over, and we are, you know, we have been separated from even our own family, and let me use myself as an example. You know, I have families in Connecticut. I have families in Philadelphia. I have families in Florida. I have families on the West Coast, and you know, and I'm talking about close families too. So when we're so disconnected and we're looking for this safe space, we are looking for this safe space because you just mentioned something critical. As soon as a man says, or even a woman says, you know, I am anxious, I am feeling pressured, I am depressed, a lot of people start to label them mad. And that's when a lot of people tend to go quiet. And that's mm-hmm. why sometimes they say, you know, if you're in that space, call the helpline. If you're in that space where you feel like you cannot go anymore, call the helpline. Because sometimes you'll talk to someone who you think is a friend, and they'll take your business out there and says, boy, you know, the one Dr. Mohammed, he might tell me say I'm anxious and him feel depressed. What, him's a madman? You know, or the one Rasclem is acting as if, say, boy, I'm crazy. And mm-hmm. and that will make us go quiet. But we need to get over that, Doc. And as I said before, oftentimes, because of sickness, because of a diagnosis, because of a separation, because of a debt in the family, because of losing your job, all of these things can actually add to you falling in that space. And the mere fact, and this is where I'm going to kind of put a wrap on the conversation, the mere fact that I personally, and you can speak on it, I personally don't think we have actually truly gotten over slavery. because
no, we have not. We have not because you know in other words, this is why if okay, our generation got the bend, and this is important. We're just saying it's critical.
Mm-hmm.
One we are, if you want to say a counterculture movement, but another it's kind of dynamic movement. Let's say for example the old sense of imagery, what determines a person's beauty or not.
Mm-hmm.
All right. There used to be some cartoon characters in Jamaica, a magazine that used to come out.
Mm-hmm.
And when a man turned Rasta as a youth and ago, them said Dirty Rasta.
Mm-hmm.
And him get isolated and he might maybe move out or they'd sit the queen of a movement. Well, one of the things was a counterculture conversation was taking place in Jamaica at the time for us was the fact that there was a cartoon character, and I'll forget it.
Mm-hmm.
A woman from outside our community, not black and brown, but from outside the community. The character, the man, there's a Rasta man coming around the corner of Orange Street and I think near Coronation Market, somewhere down there. So.
Mm-hmm.
And the woman coming around the corner, and she said, the Rasta man, and the cartoon character said, he said, Jesus Christ. And the Rasta man put him on the most and said, shh. He said, shh. Go and tell no one you are seen. So in the culture, the connections and the discussion are connecting to who we really are as a people. We let the question go and answer the three questions I gave in the beginning. Who am I in Olagati and where am I from Olagati? Those were some of the conversations in the rigmarole at the time, the pantomime, other things that was going on in the culture. That wherever people are was in the country itself, Jamaica, they were connected. We come here, migration may have impacted that, yes, but we still have cultural connections to whether it's a faith organization or something. And we got to find a way, how do we link and then provide the hotline resources that people can begin to find a way to connect to the people that are familiar with the challenges, because disparities impact us in very meaningful ways. And there's a thing called the Holmes Commission report that come out and talk about the impact of disparities in the mental health field.
Mm-hmm.
And it was published recently. You can look it up.
Mm-hmm.
And I can send you some particulars about the whole thing. But the idea is that, raising an important point,
mm-hmm.
is that we still have the opportunity. If we can, like Bob said, why Bob is saying liberate yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Because it has to be a kind of proactive, empowering kind of an activity.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, if we got to say, well, you know what, everybody busy. If there's a moment we can get together and check in and say, well, we're going to try to get together with Zoom or whatever things are in person to check in and see how people are doing. Maybe if Granny go to the church till see how she's doing and connect with her and maybe telling her something, she say, you know what, wait a second. I was just talking to so-and-so. So this is the village square being very proactive.
Mm-hmm.
This is what kind of helped us when we were growing up in a post-independent Jamaican culture.
Mm-hmm.
Because certainly we experienced the blunt of what has happened in terms of the post-traumatic slavery disorder and slavery syndrome in the culture.
Mm-hmm.
But because we had icons to the music, we had Marcus Garvey, we had some of the legacy, although we don't understand fully the legacy of Bedwood the way we should. Paul Bogle, William Garden, you know, what happened with the Maroons. We had some terms of reference to our conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Rasta man would have the counterculture space for that to take place,
mm-hmm.
and have the dialogue. So it triggered certain kind of things. For example, when I was at Excelsior, Mr. Paul allowed Muta Baruka to come every Friday and have African culture class in the evening at Excelsior.
Really?
Yeah, what for the only man, and Muta used to come to, and Muta walk barefoot back then and come,
yes,
and have,
yes, yes,
some,
yes,
and have some poignant conversation. And yeah. Muta had a conversation one time with Neil Dwyer, who was a FIFA ref, about Pan-Africanism and the role in terms of Kwame Nkrumah and stuff like that. So I'm saying to you, the Village Square was proactive in that sense.
And the Village Square is still active, you know. You talk about Mr. Paul, you talk about the principal, but you talk about Bedwood, and you have mentioned Bedwood names a couple of times on this program this morning. And folks need to understand Bedwood is from Augustown, and you know, you have to understand that in the end, they spread some propaganda on Bedwood, and which was false, you know. And one of the things that they labeled Bedwood as the flying preacher and stuff like that. But we're not going to get into that. We want to just stick to the program as we wrap this morning. And, you know, Dr. Mohammed, you know, again, it's a tough conversation. It's really a tough conversation. And folks have to understand this, that we're in challenging times, and you know, it's tough. And how we got here, it brings me back to the three questions that you ask. Who am I? Where in the world am I from? And how the hell in the world I got here?
Yep.
And if you look at the passage that took us here, you will understand why we as black and brown men, we as black and brown people, why we suffer the way we suffer. And the mere fact that, and I'm going to go and quote Malcolm X. And, you know, Malcolm X would oftentimes say, never again. We should not let it happen again. You know, for some reason, we don't want to have this conversation. We shy away from this conversation. It took me personally a long time to get here. And now that I'm here, I fully understand what it is. I fully understand what it is. And that is why I'm having this conversation with you this morning. A man who has been trained. A man who has a PhD in all of this, Doc. I have some faith, you know. I really have some faith within myself, because there was a time when I feel like giving up. But I'm holding on, Doc.
No. And a correction. It's a clinical PSYD.
So yeah, yes. Yeah, man.
So it's a doctorate in the thing.
Yes,
but,
indeed.
But I just want to cover that. But you're raising that. Let's go back to what Dr. Amos Wilson made a very important point, and to what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Amos Wilson said that he wrote the book, he wrote several, the Blueprint for Black Power, but he was a phenomenal psychologist, and he said something important.
Mm-hmm.
And this is important what you're saying. He said, I was not up on studying Marcus Garvey.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, Garvey was probably the greatest psychotherapist in our community.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go back to what Garvey said, Garvey says, a people don't know the true path like a tree without root.
Yeah. 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 On that note, Doc. On that note, Dr. Mohammed. 60 seconds. Your closing remarks.
No, well, give thanks for the conversation. I hope that we can continue this dialogue in our little village square and try to find a way that we can kind of stop the tide of epigenetics that we're experiencing. And the only way to do that is to kind of ask those three fundamental questions. And what Garvey has told us is that, Malcolm said it also as an extension of that, you can't hate root of a tree and not hate the tree. You can't hate Africa and not hate yourself.
By any means necessary, folks. By any means necessary, folks. We should not let it happen again. By any means necessary, folks. We should not let it happen again. Let's start having these conversations. You're not crazy. You're not crazy, folks. You're just going through some stressful times. You're just anxious. You're not crazy. So let's stick and stay. Let's stick together. And as you said, meeting in the African Village Square. Dr. Mohammed, I thank you so much for being a part of this conversation this morning. And yes, we're going to continue this conversation, whether it's on here, off here, but I'd rather to have them on here so we can impact and we can touch and we can help someone get over the anxiety that they're facing and get over the struggles that they're facing and get rid of the stigma when it comes to mental health. Thank you so much, Dr. Mohammed.
Yeah, man. Enough respect, you know.
One love, my brother. One love.
One heart.
Indeed. Ladies and gentlemen, we have come to the end of our featured segment, Mic Check.